You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up today at 6 on 1A Plus, it's the weekly news roundup. Mourners gathered in Memphis to remember Tyre Nichols. Talks began on the debt ceiling. And across the South, an epic ice storm left hundreds of thousands without power. Get those stories and more today at 6 on 1A Plus. Now, the U.S. technically reached its debt limit last month, and Republican House Speaker Kevin McCarthy has already been in talks with Democratic President Joe Biden about getting the House to vote to raise it. House Republicans have called for discretionary spending cuts in return for votes to keep the country from defaulting. Then there are the non-discretionary programs, the mandatory spending programs like Social Security and Medicare. They're popular programs. They account for about a third of federal spending. But there are concerns about long-term funding for those programs and ongoing questions about whether changes are needed. Here's Speaker McCarthy talking to Margaret Brennan on Face the Nation this past Sunday.
You promised you won't spend more next year than you did last year. Are you willing to consider any reductions to Social Security and Medicare?
No, let's take those off the table. I mean, if you read our commitment to America, all we talk about is strengthening Medicare and Social Security.
Some Republicans, including Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson, have suggested that Social Security and Medicare should stop being mandatory spending programs and be subject to annual budget reviews in Congress. You can join in with your thoughts on Social Security and Medicare at 800-642-1234. Are you worried about their long-term well-being? Do you want to see changes in benefits, how they're paid for? It gets complicated, but do you have ideas you would like to share? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Mark Pocan is a Democrat representing Wisconsin's 2nd Congressional District, which includes Madison and surrounding areas in south-central Wisconsin. He sponsored recent legislation on Social Security and Medicare. Representative Pocan, welcome back to Central Time.
Well, thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
I want to first ask about something you are co-sponsoring called the Protect Social Security and Medicare Act. What is the goal for this legislation?
Well, we've already heard repeated attacks on Social Security and Medicare by a number of Republicans in the House and Senate. Despite what Kevin McCarthy says, we know any one of his members who decides to pull his chain, he gets yanked, and that's the deal he made to become Speaker. But, you know, just this week, someone said we should raise the age for Social Security benefits. We've had other people talking about cutting them. The largest caucus, I think, within the Republican Party, the Republican Study Committee, has suggested putting it on the chopping block, as has Ron Johnson. So what we've done is introduce a bill that says it would take a two-thirds vote of Congress to cut Social Security or Medicare benefits. The idea is, you know, these are two of the most popular programs the federal government offers. It's not our money, really. It's the money of everyone who's paid in through their paychecks throughout their working career. And it should be something that is a big bipartisan decision to cut these programs and not just, you know, a slim majority in the Republican that they have right now in the House.
Looking at Social Security in particular, you know, we've hit a point where we're paying out more than is being paid into Social Security. The idea is probably by around 2034, the surplus is going to go away, and then benefits will have to be cut, you know, by a decent margin, not completely, but by a decent margin. They're going to cut themselves if we don't make changes right now. Why not explore the idea of maybe small cuts or changes in the age now to avoid that automatic cut in, what, 11 years?
Well, there's a super simple change you can do that extends the life for 75 years, and that's simply lifting the cap on which you quit paying into Social Security. It's one of the few regressive taxes we have. Most people know income tax, the more you make, the more you pay a greater percent of your income. But when it comes to Social Security at around $160,000, you don't pay another dime in. So it's actually regressive. Those who make more pay less into the program. If we merely lifted that cap, we would extend the life decades for Social Security. And to me, that's a very simple fix.
As I mentioned, Senator Johnson and some others say, hey, let's take this off the autopilot of mandatory spending, put it into discretionary spending. The argument, I think, in favor of that being that's going to motivate Congress to do something to avert it, you know, the running short in 11 years. What would be wrong with that idea?
Well, the wrong part of that idea is, again, it's taking the idea that, again, you have to somehow cut money that people have paid in. We've made a trust.
that people who've given us this money through their paychecks, that they'll have the money when they need it, when they retire, whether it be through Medicare for health insurance or Social Security to continue to live. But it's not just up to us to willy-nilly make cuts to what people have paid into. They've had a promise from the government. Much easier is have, you know, those who make more money pay more into it, like virtually every other tax that's out there. And you can extend the life of the program without having to do what some people want to do, which is actually get rid of Social Security and Medicare. That's the real problem. You know, this week we had a resolution, a stupid resolution condemning socialism. It combined Pol Pot and Norway, which I don't see how you do in any resolution. But they really showed their cards, the Republican Party, when there was an amendment that said Social Security and Medicare is not socialism, and they wouldn't accept it. So, you know, they've foreshadowed what they plan on doing. They plan on going after these programs. Enough of their members have said they plan on that. So we want to lift the ability to have that happen through a simple majority vote to really being a supermajority.
Talking to Representative Mark Pocan from Wisconsin, a Democrat, talking about Social Security in particular and Medicare and their future in the current Congress. Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Dave is with us in Menominee Falls. Dave, hi.
Hi, how you doing? Mark, you stole my thunder. That was my exact idea. First of all, you got to find, first of all, when a Republican calls it an entitlement, you need to sound an alarm and tell them it's not an entitlement. We paid our whole lives for that. And you should come up with a term like they came up with death tax. Come up with wealthy waiver or something like that. In other words, at $160,000, you stop paying. Come up with that. Start calling it what it is, a wealthy waiver. And you really get behind it and get people behind it. Somehow get it on the floor so it's voted on.
Dave, thanks for the call. Yeah. Representative Pocan?
Yeah, I mean, the caller's exactly right. It's stealing your money. You've paid into the program. Yes, we invest it so that there's money for the future generations, but it's a public trust. It's not that, you know, we can just take your money and do something else with it. It's our promise to you to hold your money, to make sure we have that money in the future for you. And that's why, you know, Social Security and Medicare are two of the most popular federal programs. That's why I find it amazing when people like Ron Johnson or the Republican Study Committee or any number of Republicans have proposed cuts either to Social Security or Medicare or raising the age of eligibility. You know, these are not answers to the problem. The problem is that we don't make those who make more than $160,000 pay an additional dime into it, so it's a regressive tax, and there's a pretty easy fix.
Thanks for the call, Dave. We'll go to Dick now in La Crosse. Dick, hello.
Hi. I think an interesting book for the people to read would be, it's called The Great Age Reboot, and it talks about the fact that Social Security was set up, I think, when the average age length of life was 55 years. So if we think we can keep paying into the same system and not change a few things, there's something wrong. I think we have to have people work a little longer and basically raise the retirement age.
Dick, thanks for the call. We talked to the author of The Great Age Reboot on this show, but Representative Pocan, we're living longer. Now, already the retirement age, the Social Security age, is getting bumped up slowly a month or two at a time. Dick says we might need to do more of that.
Yeah, the problem is we are living longer, but our bodies aren't necessarily performing well longer. And, you know, if you are, I spoke this morning to a bunch of folks who work in the building trades, construction industries. You know, your body is not at 67, what your body was at 47, much less your body was at 27. And you just can't extend that age for someone who's laying bricks or working concrete. It's just impossible. So what are you going to do? Say those folks no longer can work. You know, you can work all you want into whatever age. I mean, I work with a bunch of people in their 80s in Congress who are still working. But what we're saying is for those who want to retire, who've met the promise by paying into the system out of their paychecks, they should be able to retire with dignity and have Medicare available for them. And the simple fix is just making wealthy people pay their fair share rather than cutting benefits for the average person.
Thanks for that call. Time for one more call before we let you go, Representative Pocan. Elizabeth is with us in Verona. Elizabeth, hello.
Hi. I just wanted to comment on the fact that I'm 25 years old. Neither of my parents can retire. I have been worried about my retirement savings since I started working at 16 and putting money into a 401k. And it's just, I don't think I'll be able to retire. Retirement's becoming a privilege, and those who make less aren't able to afford it.
Elizabeth, thanks for the call. Representative Pocan, your thoughts in your last minute with us.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what we hear from people who call the office every single day. And, you know, first of all, I think we can make sure Social Security is there in the future. Again, a simple fix, make sure those who are the most wealthy, those who make more than $160,000, continue to pay into the program, which they don't do right now. But also, I think the caller brought up something that is very important, is that people should also start their retirement savings on their own as young as possible, because it definitely will help them. But, you know, I want to make sure that person who is living on a modest income, who's paid in and played by the rules, has money available for when they retire so they can retire with dignity. The best way we do that is you protect the programs of Social Security and Medicare. And the best way that we can do that is by bringing in the additional revenue to make sure it lasts for decades to come, not by cutting benefits. And if we are going to consider cutting benefits, let's make sure it's got a big bipartisan vote, because there must be a big reason to do it. And that means it takes 2/3 of a vote rather than a simple majority.
Thanks, Elizabeth, for the call. And Representative Pocan, thanks again for joining us.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
Mark Pocan is a Democrat representing Wisconsin's 2nd Congressional District. He joined us to talk about the future of Social Security and Medicare. We'll stay with that topic with a health policy analyst and economist about threats, possible solutions for Social Security and Medicare. You can still join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions, your thoughts, your policy ideas. That's 800-642-1234. That's coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up the conversation about Social Security and Medicare and what's happening with the debt ceiling. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Timothy McBride joins us now, the Bernard Becker Professor at the Brown School of Social Work at Washington University in St. Louis. He's a health policy analyst and health economist. He's from Milwaukee, graduate of UW-Milwaukee, got his PhD at UW-Madison. Tim, welcome to Central Time and welcome back to Wisconsin.
Good afternoon. Thanks for inviting me.
You just heard our interview with Representative Pocan. As you watch the policy debates and the early stages in Congress right now, what do you have your eye on with these programs, Social Security and Medicare?
Yeah, I did listen to the interview, and it was really interesting to listen to the representative and listen to the callers. And I largely agree with Representative Pocan. I think the things that I would say is we shouldn't entangle this debate over the future of Social Security and Medicare with this federal budget debate extending the debt limit. That's the wrong thing to do. The future of these programs is way too important. The programs are, you know, actually pretty healthy, especially Social Security. You mentioned the challenges to Social Security. Medicare's got more challenges. We can talk about what those are, but, you know, those have to be done in a real careful bipartisan way and how we fix them and with a mind for what's causing the problems.
Yeah, we hear, I think, fairly often about the Social Security 2034 issue. What challenges are out there for Medicare when it comes to its long-term funding?
Yeah, both Social Security and Medicare face similar problems, but Medicare's got additional problem. The retirement of the baby boom, you know, so we have a big 70 million population people retiring now going into the system. We have increased longevity of people at those age groups. But with the Medicare program, we have rising healthcare spending for this group that, frankly, most years outpaces the growth of the revenues into the program. So we're always kind of tweaking the program to make the revenues balance the costs.
People lay out a lot of options to help fund both of these programs. It might be, hey, let's have a larger percentage of paychecks go into Medicare and Social Security. It might be, as we heard in that conversation with Representative Pocan, raising the income caps beyond which people don't pay more as they make more money, changing age requirements. The list goes on and on. What would be your, I guess, lowest hanging fruit to help address some of these budgeting difficulties?
Yeah, I think I would separate, again, the Social Security question from the Medicare question. And Social Security, I think, could actually be fairly resolved with a few fairly simple, even changes that might not be that apparent to the beneficiaries. And, you know, one thing I'd point out to people is the last time we changed Social Security policy in a market way was 40 years ago. And think about any policy that has been in place for 40 years that hasn't changed. And that's pretty remarkable. But I think, you know, as you mentioned, the revenues and spending is going to become out of balance in a few years. And I think with a few changes, we could fix that. The representative mentioned one of them, raising the cap on the taxes would be one. As you mentioned, we've already raised the age of eligibility for benefits. So I'm not sure that makes a lot of sense to do more to that. But I think there are some tweaks around the benefit formula that actually we could do as well. But I think they really need to be done in a bipartisan way. And I agree with Representative Polkin on that.
We're talking about Social Security and Medicare and their future in a new congressional session. A lot of budget issues, debt issues on the table, and people looking at the long-term well-being of Social Security and Medicare. Timothy McBride is with us, professor at the Brown School of Social Work at Washington University in St. Louis. You can join in with your thoughts or questions at 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Randy is with us in La Crosse. Randy, hi.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I don't know if this has been brought up yet, but a huge problem that's coming up with Medicare is they are allowing Medicare to be privatized back again. And some of the funding issues, like right now, it's about almost 50% of people on Medicare are on a Medicare Advantage plan. And yep. It's actually just back to private insurance. And it's got all kinds of the problems that private insurance has. And the older people are confused and don't even know that there's stuff coming at them. So,
Randy, thanks for the call. I know Representative Polkin also has legislation on that. We didn't get into it. But, Tim, is that something you have your eye on, these Medicare Advantage programs?
I agree with the caller completely. I've been a critic of those Medicare Advantage plans since they were created to save money for Medicare, but the reality is they've actually cost the program more than people who are not in the private plan since they got created. And that's sort of kind of unconscionable. So Congress has done some things to scale back that, but there's really a lot more that could be done to scale back the costs of private plans. And it's not where money should be spent in Medicare because we need to spend it on delivery of services.
Randy, thanks for that call. We'll go to Corey now in Wausau. Corey, hello.
Hello.
What did you want to bring up, Corey?
First thing is I'm almost 50. I've been paying into Social Security my entire life of no choice of my own, and now I might not be eligible for it. So, and we have to look back to our history and our past and realize Social Security, you never used to have to pay tax on it, but every single person in office who has made it so that we have to pay tax on our Social Security has been a Democrat. So then now Biden is saying, well, we're going to have to increase our debt spending limit, and if not, well, then nobody's going to get Social Security. Why don't they say, well, then I guess Congress isn't going to get paid?
Corey, thanks for the call. First of all, the taxability of Social Security income, Tim, where did that come from?
That actually goes back to the 1983 balance, the amendments to Social Security, which were a bipartisan agreement between Ronald Reagan and the Democrats who were in Congress at that point. So those were phased in at that point. So, you know, that was kind of my point about that. And, you know, and so we've been taxing Social Security for quite a while, and I share the caller's concern about that. It feels troublesome maybe to pay Social Security taxes on it, but they were originally put on people who are somewhat higher income. But you know, one of the things I don't like about that is the threshold's not been adjusted over time, and that's a change that I would put in place if I could.
Corey, thanks for the call. And speaking of the history of these programs, Tim, you wrote a piece late last year about Wisconsin's role. Just in our last minute or so, can you remind us how Wisconsin is connected to these programs?
Yeah, I think that's a great point to point out. I got my dissertation in Madison, and you know, Wisconsin has a really historic connection to the creation of Social Security and Medicare, and the people who were on Franklin Roosevelt's original task force that created the Social Security program came largely from the economics department in Wisconsin. And Ed Witte, who, you know, that was his dorm named after him, was the leader of the researchers on that. And the people on Franklin Roosevelt's task force that came up with the proposals, which led to the passage of the Social Security Act, pretty much the minds that came to do that came from Wisconsin. So we have a really strong historical link to these programs. And that's one of the points of the article I made was, you know, we should stick with those views in Wisconsin and back up this program.
Tim, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks, sure.
That's Timothy McBride, professor at the Brown School of Social Work at Washington University in St. Louis. We talked to him about the future of Social Security and Medicare and some new bills aimed at protecting them from spending cuts. Earlier, we heard from Wisconsin Democratic Congressional Representative Mark Pocan. Still time for you to share your thoughts. And if there's a question about Social Security and Medicare you'd like to hear us talk about in a future conversation, let us know what that question is. Email ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. Coming up Monday on Central Time, electric vehicle prices have dropped slowly over the years. Now they may be going down faster, starting with big price cuts by Tesla and some competitors maybe trying to keep pace. We'll get the latest on the EV market, the latest models, and why they may be more affordable now. And Wisconsin cartoonist Linda Berry joins the show to share her love of creativity and ways to tap into our own creative selves. That and more coming up Monday here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, it's Food Friday with foods that researchers say could lead to a longer, healthier life, but still taste good. First, a new investigative report takes a look at Wisconsin's emergency mental health care system. In Wisconsin, each county is responsible for deciding how to handle psychiatric emergencies, a system that often relies on law enforcement to deal with people having mental health crises, especially in rural parts of the state. There's just one state-run psychiatric hospital open to the public in the entire state of Wisconsin, meaning that patients sometimes have to be transported hours before getting care. The Joint Finance Committee has appropriated $10 million to build more crisis centers around the state, but that funding is currently stuck in a budget dispute. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Is this part of your life? Have you or a loved one experienced a mental health crisis? Have you been through the state system? What was your experience like? If you're a first responder, love to hear from you as well. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Erin McGrody is an investigative reporting intern at Wisconsin Watch. I talked to her yesterday about her reporting on Wisconsin's emergency psychiatric care system. Now, here in Wisconsin, you write, counties are in charge. They're responsible for figuring out their crisis mental health care. In practice, how does that work?
As it currently stands, you know, more populous counties like Dane and like Milwaukee are able to have full-fledged mental health emergency rooms and emergency resources for its residents. But in smaller counties like Superior, for example, where one of my sources is from, they don't have any resources, no continuum of care, as a lot of experts have referred to it. So most people experiencing mental health crises have to be transported hours across the state, typically by law enforcement, to go to Winnebago Mental Health Institute.
Yeah, I would imagine that there would be multiple places around the state that might be able to take in somebody in that situation, emergency mental health care situation. Why do so many counties count on this one facility in Winnebago County?
So Winnebago Mental Health Institute is one of two state-funded mental health institutes. The other is Mendota here just outside of Madison, but that institute is largely reserved for people going through the criminal legal system. So if you are an individual experiencing a mental health crisis in a less populous, more rural county, then Winnebago is essentially your only option.
Wisconsin does things a little differently. Can you talk a little bit about what neighboring states are doing that gives at least a little more, if not local, regional option for people in this situation?
Yeah, so Wisconsin is one of the few states in the Midwest, actually, that still rely on counties to handle their own emergency mental health services. Most surrounding states have regionalized mental health crisis models, which means that the state is split up into regions and the counties within those regions can kind of pool resources and create emergency mental health access for residents of those counties within that specific region. So Iowa, for example, has a regionalized model, as does Minnesota and Missouri.
In just a few minutes, we'll talk to one of the people you talked to, Chrissy Bernard, who's been through this situation. In general, especially for someone in a rural county, what does this lack of local treatment, lack of even regional treatment, mean for them?
Well, it means that if they are in crisis, typically the person or people who respond are police officers. Now, this can be difficult for the person in crisis as well as the officers because most police officers don't have in-depth training on how to handle a situation where an individual is going through a mental health crisis. Because of that lack of training, there's the potential for police presence to escalate the person in crisis. In Barnard's situation, she was experiencing crisis. The police were the only ones able to respond, and she was transported to Winnebago Mental Health Institute handcuffed in the back of a patrol car, which is not the most therapeutic way to enter inpatient psychiatric care.
Talking to Aaron McGrody with Wisconsin Watch, looking at reporting on Wisconsin's psychiatric crisis response system and gaps in that system. Aaron, a lot of people, it sounds like, according to your reporting, are looking for changes, state politicians, the governor, attorney general, and others. What kind of changes are they looking for?
Yeah, so the attorney general organized a task force a few years ago to look at this issue and bring together a variety of voices to come up with ideas. This included mental health practitioners, social work advocates, a lot of law enforcement who, you know, acknowledge that they don't have adequate training for these situations. Not only that, but in smaller counties where maybe only a few officers are on shift at a time, if one officer has to transport a mental health patient 5 hours away, that takes that officer off of shift. And in turn, there's, you know, less public safety resources for that individual community.
And $10 million were set aside in a past budget to do at least some of this work, but what? It's stuck?
Yeah, so the governor had proposed about $12.3 million over 2 years to build up regional crisis centers. These would act as stabilization facilities for people experiencing mental health crises. That way they wouldn't have to be transported all the way across the state. They could be treated closer to their home community, closer to family and friends and a support system. The governor's funding did not make it through the legislative process. The Joint Finance Committee ultimately took all of the governor's proposals out of the budget and set aside $10 million in supplemental funding. But the way that state statute works is that an agency designated to receive supplemental funding has to meet with the Joint Finance Committee and essentially justify that they need the funding. As it currently stands, there's a bit of a standstill between the Joint Finance Committee and the Department of Health Services. So this funding is essentially sitting there. And if it's not sorted out, then it will lapse back into the general fund.
Another piece of the puzzle here, we're talking about crisis facilities. You read a little bit about, you know, what happens next. Is there another level of treatment? You used the phrase, I think, continuum of care earlier, so that it's not you're in the crisis center or you're getting nothing. Do we have things in between?
So, like I mentioned, in more populous areas, there are absolutely, in between levels. Madison, for example, UW Hospital has a 20-bed inpatient psychiatric care unit. This can operate for individuals who are admitted to the ER in crisis, and they can stay there from anywhere from, 3 or 4 days to longer if necessary. One of my sources, who's head of emergency psychiatric services for Milwaukee, Dr. Tony Thrasher, mentioned that a lot of times individuals in crisis can stabilize within 24, 48, or 72 hours. So those longer 90-day holds that are standard practice at Winnebago Institute are oftentimes not necessary.
Another part of this, you mentioned often police are the only available first responder in a mental health care crisis. You write that bigger cities like Madison and Milwaukee, and we've seen this around the country, starting to train civilians to address at least some of these mental health crisis situations. What's happening so far?
Yeah, so in Madison, they have the Community Alternative Response Emergency Services, or CARES, program. And they recently released a report this past November, kind of cataloging their responses and their work over the last year to identify whether the program's working. And they responded to 935 calls in its first year of operation and were able to resolve most of those situations on the scene without having to involve police officers. It looks like just 3% of those calls needed to be ultimately dispatched to law enforcement. So in these situations, we have people who are more trained, more adequately trained in mental health response, whether those are therapists, social workers, any number of people, crisis workers, who can respond to a crisis situation and ultimately de-escalate it without having to require law enforcement, which works better for the patient who may not want to interact with law enforcement. And ultimately, it works better for law enforcement who aren't getting adequate training on how to handle these situations.
Aaron, we'll leave it there. Thanks for sharing your reporting with us.
Thanks so much.
That was Aaron McGrody with Wisconsin Watch. She talked to us about her reporting on Wisconsin's psychiatric crisis response system. Coming up, we'll meet one of the people featured in her report, a resident of Superior who's experienced that system firsthand and now works as a peer support specialist. You can join in if you have a story you're willing to share at 800-642-1234. If you or a loved one has dealt with Wisconsin's emergency mental health system, such as it is, what happened? How did it go? Do you work at some point in this field as a first responder or a service provider? You could join in as well at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up that conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation about Wisconsin's emergency psychiatric care system, which advocates say relies too much on law enforcement, can be traumatizing for patients. Our next guest has experienced that system firsthand and now works to help other people in that situation. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 with your questions, maybe your own experiences. Chrissy Barnard is a peer support specialist with the National Alliance on Mental Illness in Wisconsin, also known as NAMI Wisconsin, and president of the NAMI Lake Superior South Shore affiliate. Chrissy, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you.
Well, we just heard from Aaron some of the big picture going on here. You shared your story with her some. Can you tell us a little bit about the situation you found yourself in about, I think, 15 years ago or so?
Yeah, so my mental health struggles started at a young age and then only grew worse over time. And I actually have had 33 hospitalizations. And in 2007, it really peaked. And I was in and out of the hospital every month, but the month of August. And January, I was eventually committed to Winnebago. And getting handcuffed by the police and hauled across the state is very, very traumatizing. And that was an eye-opening experience for me. And I've been at several different hospitals across Wisconsin and in Minnesota. And Winnebago, I was there from January through the end of May. And it caused me so much hardship because I ended up losing a fiance, a house that we had together, my job and friends, relationships, and my pets and everything. And it destroyed almost my entire life. And I felt like I lost my soul and who I was in the process. So it was definitely a game changer for me.
So much going on there. Part of the problem is the sheer distance. You're from Superior, Winnebago. Yeah. That's in Appleton. How much did that, I mean, just being transported back and forth and then being so far away from home, how much did the sheer distance add to your problems?
Well, it adds a great deal of difficulty because my family couldn't come and visit me because it was winter and it's a 5-hour drive, almost 5 hours. And so I felt even more isolated than other people may have been. So it was a challenge for sure.
Now you're working with other people as a peer support specialist. Can you talk about some of what helped you get past that situation where you were, as you were saying, in and out of hospitals?
Yeah. So what really helped change things for me was a therapy called dialectical behavioral therapy, and then getting peer support through NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and medications also helped for me. And the peer support was really a game changer with that, having that trifecta with those three. And it changed my life completely. I moved back to Superior after my Winnebago stay, and I was able to get a job. I've had the same job almost 13 years now. I have multiple jobs now in addition to the peer support. And then I bought my own house and straightened out my finances, and I have a dog and two cats, and I'm involved with NAMI at all different levels, including at the national level now. And I also feel like I can give back to my community, and working as a peer support specialist, I now give hope to others that recovery is possible and encourage them to find the supports they need to find their own journey to recovery.
With the emergency mental health crisis system in Wisconsin, not much has changed, as I understand it, in the last 15 years. What kind of changes would you like to see so maybe that person going through what you went through today gets help faster, gets better help in the moment?
Yes, I would like it to see a more regionalized model, not so county by county based, because I've seen the differences living in different parts of this state, that it's variable, greatly variable. Some counties have way more resources than other counties. And like, for example, Douglas County is like one of the only counties without CCS. So it would be great to see more consistency across the whole state.
And I'm sorry, CCS is
Comprehensive Community Services.
Thank you.
And so it would be great to have a regional based model where there would be more services provided in each area of the state. So
talking to Chrissy Barnard, peer support specialist with NAMI Wisconsin. That's the National Alliance on Mental Illness here in Wisconsin. She's based in Superior, talking about her own experiences and changes she'd like to see in Wisconsin's mental health care crisis system. Let's bring in a caller at 800-642-1234. Brad is with us in Milwaukee. Brad, hi.
Hello, how are you?
Good. What did you want to tell us about?
Well, I've been a psychiatric nurse for 11 years. I worked at all of the major psychiatric hospitals in the city of Milwaukee, and I started at county, which back in the day, they would have wrist and ankle restraints. Federal government came in, and they said, that was enough. There was restraint beds. So people were put into restraints. You have this thing, it's called catecholamine collapse. And people, they get their adrenaline worked up. You put them in a restraint bed, and then they relax, and all kinds of really bad things happen, like heart attack, stroke, things of that nature. Then I moved on to another psychiatric hospital. They were doing the same thing. And then I found a hospital that has a complete shift in how they treat human beings without having to use restraint beds, without having to use IM psychotropic meds to control the behaviors. However, there's issues with that in that you will get a certain level, higher level of acuity, where the training, even amongst psychiatric nurses, isn't quite up there to keep people safe. So the issue is very complex. To find people care, that's another thing as far as insurance goes. You know, the
Brad, I got you. We don't have a ton of time. You've already given us a lot to talk about. I think, Chrissy, Brad concerned about the quality of care, the humaneness of care, staffing, availability of care to people who need it. Run where you want to go with that.
Wow, there's just so much in there. Well, I know the access to care is a huge barrier across the state. And with the and there's a lack of providers across the state. And there's also the issue of getting credentialing from the state as well. So I know for our area in particular, in northwestern Wisconsin, we have to get services in Minnesota usually because we don't have any inpatient beds in the very far northwest region. And that creates a whole bunch of issues because a lot of people, a lot of my friends, end up in Fargo, North Dakota. So then the state loses their jurisdiction. They end up in Rochester, Minnesota. And so we end up all over the state. I've ended up in Cambridge, Minnesota. And it creates all sorts of barriers because then you have even less access to your family. You have less access to the financial resources you need and transportation to get back home. It's just a nightmare sometimes. And that access is a barrier everywhere in the state. But I notice that it has a unique challenge for those border counties in particular, everywhere along the border counties. So, yeah, there's so much in that comment. It's just wonderful,
Brad,
to hear.
Thanks for that call. Chrissy, in our last minute or so, I know you've been advocating for more regional care so people can get care within, you know, an hour of their home instead of in North Dakota or at Appleton or whatever the case may be. Are the people who are making decisions, do you think they're hearing you? Are you seeing this being taken seriously?
Well, I feel the governor is. I'm not so sure at other levels of the government. So I do hope that changes are being made and will be made over time. But I'd pray for better changes that are faster because we need change now. Our system's in crisis.
Chrissy, thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you.
Chrissy Barnard is a peer support specialist with the National Alliance on Mental Illness Wisconsin, also known as NAMI, and president of the NAMI Lake Superior South Shore affiliate. She talked to us about her advocacy for crisis mental health care changes here in Wisconsin. Coming up after the news, it's this week's edition of Food Friday. We'll get delicious recipes inspired by some of the healthiest places on the planet where the food seems to have long-term benefits for our well-being. Find out more with the author of the cookbook, Blue Zone's American Kitchen, 100 Recipes to Live to 100. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time. This is the Ideas Network.